This is The Fire Life.
Medic 11.
We still have quite a bit of fire in the water.
The podcast that takes you inside Adams County Fire Rescue.
Adams County Off Day.
And introduces you to the brave men and women keeping our community safe.
When the tone drops, we're all family and we all take care of each other.
Right now we have an outside fire.
This week on The Fire Life.
Engine 11.
Fire Medic Jason Beerworth.
Sometimes we're asked to do extraordinary things, but we're just ordinary people.
Engineer Carrie Porter.
I got convinced that I was wasting my life and I need to be a firefighter.
And Fire Chief Stuart Sunderland.
In general, that's all we're doing is solving people's problems for them. And sometimes we don't know what those problems are going to be until they happen.
This is The Fire Life, Adams County Fire Rescue.
That's right. This is the inaugural episode of The Fire Life.
Very first one.
I'm Julie Brownman. I'm the PIO of Adams County Fire Rescue. And my co-host today is Jason Beerworth, a fire medic at Adams County Fire Rescue.
Hello.
Please explain to us a fire medic. Some people may not even know, right?
So I am a firefighter, and I'm also a paramedic. So at our department, we run both. We do all our own medical transports and everything. So if you call 911, you'll get an engine staffed with firefighters and EMTs, and you'll get a medic unit staffed with firefighters and a paramedic and an EMT, or two medics. But so if it's a medical call, I handle that and all that stuff and can take care of all that. If it's a fire call, I put on my bunker gear just like everybody else, and we go in and fight the fire.
So the reason we wanted to do this is I've been in the fire service now just a year, and what I quickly realized is I don't think the public really knows everything that you guys do or really what you do. And we're doing this for the community to just kind of tell the stories of some of the people here, the men and women. We've got exceptional people, but to explain, you know, what you guys are doing.
And I think that's awesome. I think, you know, even my own family and stuff, oh, you guys do this, or firefighters are like that. It's just the perception of, you know, what is definitely different, you know. You guys all sleep together, you know, in one big room. And some departments still do that. We're lucky enough here that we, you know, we have our own bedrooms and stuff. But yes, we do stay on. We do 48-hour shifts, so we live, eat, and sleep here.
So have you ever seen any of the show, like any of the TV shows, the firefighter TV shows?
Oh my God, I don't watch them because they're all terrible. They're all terrible. None of them do us any justice.
Okay, so it's like nothing. That's what nothing, I know. Like you watch us, it is nothing like what you see on TV.
Nothing like what we do in real life.
I think a lot of people don't realize that, 75% of our calls are medical calls.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so it's not constantly always fighting structure
fires. Yeah, these great huge fires, and those seldom. It's been a few months since I've put on my bunker gear to fight an actual fire. But you're absolutely right. Most of our calls are medical calls, car accidents. We have a lot of highway in our district, a lot of car accidents.
Mm-hmm.
So
we're going to talk to Chief Sunderland a little bit later about.
That'll be fun.
Yeah. So he's just, and like a lot, like everything, COVID has also affected the fire service.
Yeah.
And you know that firsthand because you're a paramedic.
Mm-hmm. It's changed the way we've had to do medicine and everything. You know, just in the beginning when it first came out, if it was a possible COVID call, if they were having, if somebody was having a fever, you know, the safety gear that we wore changed. You know, we had to wear full little Tyvek suits, and they'd only send one medic in to go talk to the person, so we wouldn't have to worry about, you know, getting the entire crew sick.
It has
changed things.
What do you want the public to know about what you guys do that you think that they don't know? That what it's like to be a firefighter, what it's like to be a firefighter at Adams County Fire Rescue?
There's so much that we do on, I think that the public doesn't realize. For me, the biggest thing that I'd like to see come out of this is for people to realize that we're just normal people. There's nothing unique and special about us. You know, we're unique and special in the fact that, you know, being our own person and everything like that, and but we're still human beings. We still make mistakes, you know, and we just have, sometimes we're asked to do, you know, extraordinary things, but we're just ordinary people.
You guys come from all different backgrounds.
All different backgrounds.
Right. What was your background?
My background. It took me like, so going, I was never one of those kids that was like, I wanted to be a firefighter when I grew up. Mm-hmm. I had no idea what I wanted to do or where I wanted to go. I went to, when I graduated high school, I went to the Art Institute of Colorado here, got my degree in video production. So something that had nothing at all to do with the fire service. And it was really just by accident that I kind of fell into the fire service. But you get a taste of it. And I think that's the same with a lot of people, is that you love it, and there's nothing else you'd rather be doing.
Right.
You realize you're good, you know, you're good at it. So I was like, I'm good at this.
Yeah. And the camaraderie is pretty, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. So before we take a break and talk to Chief Sunderland, just give me so you guys are on 48 hour shifts, which is, for people that are listening, it's not a 9-to-5 thing where you're here for 2 days. It is calls in the multiple calls in the middle of the night.
Oh.
You never know what you're going on.
You never know. That is the big thing about it. So I'm here for 48 hours. Say 7-to-5. 7-to-5 is where, you know, we're doing our trainings. We're doing business inspections. We're out with the community. We're doing all our truck checks and stuff like that. But, and sprinkled in between all that is whenever 911 call drops, or so we're running calls constantly. And then yes, at night we'll run the calls all night. There's never a break until we get off shift. Anytime that call between 7 a.m. day one to 7 a.m. 48 hours later, anytime you call 911, you're going to get, we'll answer that call.
We had some people write into our Facebook page, and a couple questions I wanted to ask you before we take a break. What, one of the questions I thought was interesting was what do you guys consider as you approach a fire or a call? What's going through your mind?
So a lot of it is the first information that we get from dispatch. So that tells me kind of what we're going on. Are we going on a fire? Are we going on a car accident? Are we going on somebody who's sick? Just needs help. So depending on what that is, I'm thinking about, okay, first thing is, where's the scene at? But where do I need to park this apparatus? What kind of equipment am I going to need? If it's a sick call, okay, what is the worst possible scenario and what equipment am I going to need for that? And I kind of think I do that with everything. If it's a fire, what's the worst possible scenario? And I start thinking steps through of what I'm going to do or what my next steps are going to be. If it's a fire call, I know it's our first district dues, which means I'll be there first on scene. I know that I'm going to be taking the hose and I'm going to be going in and I'm going to be fighting that fire. So I'm thinking about, okay, what's this fire look like? What's the building going to look like as we're pulling around the corner? If I see, you know, if we see flames blowing out of a window, then I know that I need to start putting water on it sooner. If we see no smoke, no fire, we've had those fire calls that come in and there's no smoke, no fire. Okay, now we're kind of investigating.
So that's one of the things we want to do in this podcast, is explain the job and, you know, explain everything that goes into it. And the first person that we're going to start with, of course, is Chief Sunderland.
Yeah.
And you'll hear from him right after this break. But first, a message from our fire prevention group.
I'm Bianca Chancho, life safety educator at Adams County Fire Rescue. We're going to give you some safety tips throughout these podcasts, and here's the first one. When it comes to children, safety should be the priority, and when it comes to fire safety, it is no exception. While many parents may be returning to work, children may be cooking and heating up their own meals, and we want to give our listeners some helpful facts to consider. Every day, at least one child dies from a home fire, and another 293 children are injured from fires or burns. 90% of all fire-related deaths are due to home fires and leave families as little as 2 minutes to escape after an alarm sounds. So how do parents ensure their kids are safe while at home alone? Keeping young children at least 3 feet away from anything that can get hot, like space heaters or stovetops, helps reduce the risk of injury. Having food available that does not require using the stove is also a great way to avoid a burn injury. Let's keep our kids safe while at home.
Welcome back to the Fire Life, a podcast about life at Adams County Fire Rescue. Julie Brauman, Jason Beerworth.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning. We are now joined by our first guest ever on the podcast, Chief Stuart Sunderland. Very first one.
Numero uno.
It's got to be all uphill from here.
No, it's going to be a lot of fun. Now, you were just sworn in. Your first day on this job of being chief of Adams County Fire Rescue was June 1st.
Correct.
It's Jason and I were talking about. It's probably a learning curve and a tough job anyway. But then you get COVID. Right? So you were just thrown into that position. How did you kind of work your way through that?
I'm still trying to figure that out. Yeah, leading up to this, obviously, I had some forewarning that I was going to be sworn in as the chief, and you start to think in your mind, what's your game plan, and you know, what's the first 90 days look like, and how do you make this transition? And then when this COVID thing hit, it kind of all went out the window, you know, because you want to interact with people. And, you know, I guess my first thought was, this is a fantastic organization with good people. Number one priority is just not to screw it up. My first thought was, okay, what are we doing good? And I know the people online are running calls and they're doing their business and they're all experts. So that's kind of a peace of mind. Just let them do their thing and stay out of their way, and then figure out how to build a team administratively remotely. The problem was every 2 weeks our plans changed.
The one thing I've noticed though about firefighters is that you guys adapt. I mean, there's something and you, whatever problem it is, your job is to figure it out. Mm-hmm. So I never had any doubt that, you know, you were going to pivot, I guess, as many times as you had to pivot. Now, you've been in the fire service for 30 years, right?
Correct.
Okay, so I think a lot of people want to know, how do you become a fire chief? What is that path to get to being the one?
You know, I think everyone has their own little path, and coming into it, I by no means ever looked up and said, I want to be the chief. You know, as a rookie firefighter 30 years ago, I was just trying to make my way and become a decent firefighter. And then after a while, you start to look up and what's the next challenge. And for me, it was to become a lieutenant. I wasn't really thinking beyond becoming a lieutenant.
30 years, I mean, you've seen a lot change.
Mm-hmm.
Take us through some of that. What did the day-to-day look like when you first got on?
Yeah, it was different. It was so much different than, number one, I got on with no certifications, took a test, went through, and obviously scored high enough on this test to get hired, and then went through interview processes and so forth, and got hired. And then I went to the academy and to EMT school. So that's one of the bigger changes over my career is we've struggled to find ways to weed people out. Our number one thing is just to find great people, and that's what builds a great organization. But it seems like it used to be much more competitive. There was less hiring, so there were more candidates mm-hmm. applying for every single position. We didn't do a whole lot of hiring. When I got hired, a shift was 10 people. And I think I was the rookie for like 5 years.
And that's a shift.
A shift.
And that was how many stations at the time?
That was three stations.
So three stations, wow. Medic units at the time?
No, we had a private ambulance company. Okay. Back in the day, it was Reed Ambulance, and then it transitioned to AMR.
Okay. And so that was roughly three people at a station?
Maybe
three people.
So that is one of the huge differences.
So I work at a station, for our viewers out there, that we have 10 people at that station every shift. And that's one of our bigger stations. And we're looking at now, our daily levels is 31. We have 31
working
employees.
Towards that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
With this next academy, we're trying to get to 31 per shift.
So we'll have 31 people per shift, which that was our department.
Wow.
That's crazy.
And
that
I
is
think
just crazy.
We had a chief, a fire marshal, and then 30 people online, and a secretary. So we had 33 people total.
Total.
That's it.
That's crazy.
And so that's a shift now.
Yeah.
So... yeah, it's been a big growth. And back then, we ran with two people on an engine a lot, you know, because there was zero overtime. It was taboo. Mm-hmm. So if there was someone on a vacation, you just ran short. So if there's three people at a station and one of them's on vacation, you ran with two people.
Wow.
So you look back too, and I feel like one of the great things about, I've been at Adams County Fire Rescue for a year, and I'm so impressed with how progressive it is, and how, especially like with the cancer awareness, with the gear, and how, you know, you're watching out for the firefighters. When you look back at that time, I mean, whatever worked, right? Like, you just, you weren't thinking about those kind of things.
Right. And I don't, I think part of it was materials, you know, the construction materials and furnishings were made of different things back in the day. Now everything is synthetic. So the cancer, you know, the carcinogens that are put off by fires are so much worse now. And we're paying attention to it now. And we're studying those things. And we realize that cancer is an issue. So over the last number of years, we've taken huge steps in the fire service in general, but especially in this organization to try and mitigate that. And for the first 10 years of my career, probably, we slept with our bunker gear in our bedrooms. And for those people that don't know, it's the big firefighting pants and firefighting boots and coats mm-hmm. we put on. We would bring those into our bedroom and put them at the base of our bed. And if we got a call in the middle of the night, you jumped up and put your bunker gear on and ran out the door. So one of the very first steps we took was getting that out and leaving those mm-hmm. at the truck. So waking up and going out to the bay to put your bunker gear on and forbidding bunker gear and those types of things into the fire station to try and mitigate the exposure. But now we're to the point where every person has two sets of bunker gear, and as soon as they get contaminated, they're washed.
And that's the great thing about that compared to that time too. I'm sure you probably only had one set back then.
One crappy set.
So you're absolutely right. Now, if I go on a fire, first thing I do when I get back is I put my my secondary gear into service, and we wash our primary gear right away.
Yeah. Do you have, as the V chief, do you have a lot of, and you used to be a firefighter, right? You are a firefighter. Where's your worry level when things happen? I know you have a lot to worry about, but I would assume your main worry level is with the men and women.
Absolutely. A lot of people don't realize this. They think, oh, these guys are running into a fire or burning building, and that's dangerous. In my mind, the worst, most hazardous place is out on the highway, because our organization in particular, as Jason knows, covers a lot of highway. We're on the highway a lot, and we've had people hit on the highway. But that is the place I worry most. Of course, it's an inherently dangerous job, period. Not with just fires, but, you know, the domestic violence stuff that's going on, or the unrest mm-hmm. that's going out there. I'm starting to worry more and more about that. But historically, being out on the highway is probably the most dangerous place.
Yeah.
Because people don't pay attention. And that's why we're really trying to push out this campaign about slow down and move over. And don't text and drive, right?
Don't text and drive.
Yep. Yeah. And I know one of the questions you were going to ask me about is what's some of the most memorable calls I've ran on. There's this kind of defining moment in my career that I look back on, and it was a fire. It was the Pine Tree fire, which really opened a lot of doors for me. Organizationally, and then just relationships outside the organization. And it was a fire that came in, two people on an engine, myself, and I was the acting engineer. Our engineer was the acting officer. We pulled up to an apartment fire at 2 a.m, people hanging out windows, there's a major fire, and it was completely overwhelming. And Auto Aid back then came from North Metro Fire. Well, as North Metro Fire is coming to help us, they're driving past their own apartment building on fire. So we have these two huge apartment buildings burning simultaneously.
Wow.
Two people died in our building, and multiple people were seriously injured in the other building, which was called Mountain Knoll. So this fire, we developed this arson task force. It was called the Pine Tree Mountain Knoll's Arson Task Force. And it was ATF, the Sheriff's Department, and then investigators from each of our agencies. And I worked on that they actually asked me if I could work on that with them. The sheriffs are the experts in conducting criminal investigations, but certainly the fire and the fire behavior piece of it, that's our world.
Mm-hmm.
But we worked on this for 6 months. I was assigned to that full-time for 6 months.
Wow.
It resulted in two convictions. The same two guys set fire to both of these apartment buildings.
Wow.
Burned his girlfriend's apartment down, went up to his other girlfriend's and burned that one down. And there was two guys involved with it.
Wow.
But it took 6 months to fix it. We knew who did it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But after that, the relationships that I had built with the sheriff's department in particular opened doors for me. They asked me if I would attend the police academy at that time. And so I asked our chiefs, and they thought it was a good idea because they felt like it would pay dividends back to our organization. So I attended the police academy in 1996 and 1997 and became a post-certified peace officer. So I spent 8 years as a reserve detective with the sheriff's department, as well as did investigations here. It was invaluable.
Which is harder, a fire academy or a police academy?
I gotta say fire. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know, it's just different. The police academies are longer. Mm-hmm. In general, you know, I think our fire academy is 12 to 14 weeks. But I still say if they would have scored 10 points higher, they would have been firefighters. So.
Right.
I hear that a lot. Yeah.
It's awesome.
No, but seriously, we do have a healthy competition with the police officers, and we jab at each other a little bit, but all joking aside, they have a very difficult job, and we support them out there, and it's a really difficult thing, especially with all that's going on out of the world. So they're in our thoughts.
What's a day in the life of your world? Because it's very different than, you know, when you were online. It's a lot of things that maybe you didn't even know. I mean, you had Chief Loriani before to see what he Correct. Was doing, but it's a lot.
You know, besides being thrown to the wolves in the middle of this COVID thing, it was right in the middle of an audit. June 1st was right in the middle of that, and it was completely on my shoulders. And so there was a huge learning curve between June 1st and the end of June, just understanding all the nuances to the audit and the budget process and so forth. And then as soon as you become the fire chief, all of a sudden now you're on all these boards and committees, you know. It's all these things behind the scenes that make things work. And so ADCOM, our dispatch center, we could not survive without having great dispatchers, mm-hmm. which we do. Mm-hmm. But all the fire chiefs and police chiefs serve on that board. Well, ADCOM gets part of their funding from this E911 authority board. So someone has to serve on that board and steer money. And so it becomes much more of a political work than I had ever anticipated. But and every day is different. We call ourselves an all-hazard fire department, meaning we do hazmat, fire, EMS, you know, auto accidents, just about, as you mentioned, anything you can think of. I think the public sees our big red fire trucks driving down and they assume we're going to a fire or something like that. But there's so much more that leads up to that. It's all the preparation to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
It's train. Every day you guys have training. It's preparation. It's planning. And there's so much work that goes into responding and preparing for the unknown. In general, that's all we're doing is solving people's problems for them. And sometimes we don't know what those problems are going to be until they happen,
mm-hmm.
Which in my mind is probably the most important reason why we just want to hire a diverse workforce.
Mm-hmm.
Last question. What's the best thing about being the chief and the thing that you're like, meh, I could do that.
Well, number one, we talked about before is kind of progressing up. And I think part of what's driven me and drives a lot of people is wanting to have some influence and help set the direction for the organization. And so as I've progressed up through the chain, you start to have a little bit more say in that direction. And ultimately, as a fire chief, you definitely have some ability to set the course with the understanding there's a lot of good people putting input
mm-hmm.
along the way. And so we become a great organization because of all the people underneath helping us figure out which direction to go and what works and what doesn't. So that's kind of what's driven me to get here. But really the fun stuff is making that phone call. It's so joyful to make a phone call and congratulate someone on a promotion.
That's awesome.
Or congratulate someone that they just got offered a job, their dream job. Some of these firefighters test for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, very few of them, it's a quick thing. It's usually, I would guess most people test for 5 years before they get a job.
I was 6 years, 6 years testing.
You were 6 years, yeah.
4 years as a reserve.
I know we have a lot of people who were 10 years. Yeah. In fact, they're like, if I don't get it this time, I'm done. But that's the joyful part, is calling saying congratulations, because you know you just changed that person's life and their family's life forever.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Conversely, though, the worst part is making the other phone call and making those tough decisions that affect people's families and people's careers the other direction.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that is no fun. It weighs on you. It you lose sleep over it, and it doesn't matter who they are or how much help they gave you in making the hard decision for themselves.
Right.
It's still hard to yank the rug out from someone's career. But you know, sometimes you got to do that, but that is the least fun part of the job. Luckily we don't have many of those because we go to great lengths to hire great people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 99% of our people are just outstanding.
Yeah,
so, I agree.
They are.
Yeah.
Okay, so I said last question, but I do this all the time. we're progressive. We move forward. Sure. You're now, it's your mission. Where are we going? What's your vision?
As you guys know, there's been a lot of changes over the last, you know, 7 years, 6 years, whatever it is, with the merge. And then, we explored another merge. And we're not necessarily actively seeking out things like that. I think it needs to just be more natural and kind of homogenous in what presents itself. Our organization right now is in fantastic shape. The cogs are all turning. Financially, we're stable. So we're not out there trying to solve a problem necessarily, other than, you know, as we know, we just partnered with North Metro on their fleet facility just because it made sense for both organizations. And so I think that's what it's all about, is if we have a problem we need to solve, we'll go out there and seek ways to try and solve it. If it helps our organization and ultimately helps the community is what it's all about, we'll go out and try and find a solution to that. Right now, just trying to keep my feet underneath me and get through this COVID thing. Besides all that, you know, being a new chief, I just want to work and figure out and learn how to be a good chief. And there's obviously a transition that goes with that. And but that's my priority for now. Keep things plugging along and learn my new job.
Chief, thank you so much. Thank you for sitting down with us. We appreciate it. We know how busy your schedule is and everything. So we really appreciate you taking the time to sit down.
Sure.
And allowing us to introduce you to the public.
When we come back, we're going to talk with Carrie Porter, who is an engineer at Station 11. She has a really interesting story. Everybody here, you know, has a story, but hers is really interesting. But first, here's a message from our fire prevention.
I'm Whitney Even, Acting Fire Marshal with Adams County Fire Rescue. At Adams County Fire Rescue, we understand that summer is a time for fun, but it is important to make sure that you and your family are being cautious when using things like fireworks, grills, and other potentially dangerous materials. Here are a few things to keep in mind for you and your family this summer. Be sure to keep all unnecessary objects away from the grill. Also, gas grills contribute to a higher number of home fires overall than charcoal grills. Another unknown fact is that failing to clean the grill is actually a leading factor contributing to many grill fires. Keep children and pets at least 3 feet away from the grill area. We hope you continue enjoying the rest of your summer. And remember these safety tips when grilling with your family and friends.
All right, we're back on The Fire Life. Julie Brownman, Jason Beerworth.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello. We are joined by, as we teased right before the break, engineer Carrie Porter. We're at Station 11 right now.
Hello.
Well, so Carrie, how long have you been in the fire service?
I believe this year was my 9th year. It was actually in July. Been doing it for, this would be actually 10 years with my reserve.
How did you get into doing this?
I was a coach at the University of Denver, and we've had many accidents that were...
A gymnastics coach, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
And the accidents that happened there were actually pretty brutal. So I wanted to go back and do something that was a little bit more than first aid. And so I took an EMT course up at ACC, and I got convinced that I was wasting my life and I need to be a firefighter. So
gymnastics is too dangerous, so I'm going to become a firefighter.
Yes. Actually, it was I think they thought I was going to become to go on a private ambulance or something. They didn't realize I was just taking the class just to take it. And I believe actually three of my teachers just happened to be battalion chiefs. They kind of just, all three of them took me by the wing and just kind of pushed me through the testing processes and helped me kind of put out a plan. And then one of them actually suggested SWAC, which was Southwest Adams County, as a reserve. And so I started there, and then that's kind of where it all began.
It's a really unique story. Everybody has a story about how they get into the fire service. DU gymnastics is the real deal. Anything involved with DU, obviously coaching, is a big deal. I don't think I've ever, though, heard of a firefighter taking your path here. Mm-hmm. So when you got into the fire service, were you like, okay, this feels right, or was it so different?
I was the only female, and so it was difficult. I didn't have any friends. But when I was doing the reserve, I had lots of friends. It wasn't like a full acceptance right away, or it didn't feel like it. But it slowly became something that I absolutely love, and I love the people I work with now. It just took some time, I think, for everybody to kind of get used to it.
It's interesting because we have Christy Hua, who was the first one on North Washington, and you're the first one on SWAC, and now women in the fire service. It's not nearly as unique, I guess, as it was before, but you were really, a pioneer in that. So I guess you kind of have to look back and go, it's tough to be the first at anything, right? I mean, because it's never been done before.
I think the part that made me want to keep going is because generally if I don't like something or if somebody says I can't, I'm just going to do it anyway. You're not going to make me quit. If anybody's going to make me quit, it's going to be me and not somebody else. So I think that's what kept me going. A lot of the people I kind of looked up to, they're the ones that would secretly give me little emails. You know how they kind of would treat you in front of all the other guys, but then you'd go back and read their email and say, okay, they secretly think that I can do this. So, you know, it kind of was motivational.
Yeah, and not only can you do it, but what I've been told, you're like the fittest firefighter here.
100% the fittest firefighter. We have a fit test every year that we do, and there's only one person who can score. And you're not. And they told us like on this test, like you're not even able. They're like, no one can score 100%. And lo and behold, the only person that can score 100% is Kerry Porter here, which is amazing, which is awesome. Yeah. Was there any one thing that was the turning point for you where you're like, you know what? Actually, I do like this.
Actually, there's two. I got paired up with Mike Reeder and Corey Davidson, and they really changed my outlook. And then another guy came back from paramedic school, was Josh Venerable. He works at Frederick Firestone now. It was about when he came back that they started that engineer process. And so I was like, hey, I'm going to test for this. And then when I got promoted, everything just got a little better. And honestly, the merge with North Wash was probably the best thing that's ever happened, and not even for myself. I think it changed a ton of us as firefighters, both sides, and I think it made us all better people on top of being better firefighters. You just look around, and I think we have one of the best departments. Everybody's just happy.
Makes a huge
difference,
right?
Which is huge, absolutely.
So you mentioned being testing to be an engineer. For the public, exactly what besides driving, obviously, but what is that role of an engineer?
It depends on the day. We basically just ran a bunch of calls, but we also have our truck checks, so we have to go through the engine, make sure everything's accounted for, plus we have to make sure the engine's running correctly, make sure we have water in it. It's kind of the important one. So basically do that. We take care of all of anything that basically has wheels.
Do you drive the beast? You drive that truck. That, I mean, that is...
And I don't have the phone book to sit on, and I don't have special shoes.
The seat gets closer. For the public who may not know, a tower or a truck is our ladder. So it'll be the piece of equipment that has, like ours has it's a 100-foot ladder on the top of it.
So what would you like to tell the public out there about somebody that does drive a truck, and when you're out and you're driving emergent? Tell people.
It's difficult because I don't think they realize how heavy these trucks are. We're not going to just stop. It takes us a long time to stop. So when they cut us off or they pass us, it's just nice that they move off to the right. Don't stop and put your hazards on, because we've had people just slam on their brakes, stop. And I know they're trying. So you can't get too mad at them, but it's very dangerous. Just kind of being aware of what's going on, put your phones down, move over to the right, pay attention, look in the mirrors more often, especially up in this district, because we're out all the time. Just don't pass the firefighters, because you don't know which direction they're going to go. Sometimes they don't even know where they're going, because we're still getting information, and I could take a hard right to a different exit, and you're going to be trying to pass me. And I have the right of way because you're supposed to pull over for emergency. So it can get dangerous.
How are people out there? Like, pretty good or?
No. No, okay. Not really. I don't know what to say, but no.
Well, you're absolutely.
Yeah, all right.
Absolutely right. It's everybody's all over the place. You can never.
Yeah. Sometimes you get, you know, they throw profanities at you. Sometimes they pass you and they're not nice about it. They'll cut you off. Just think of it as we're saving somebody in your family. Mm-hmm. So please just be courteous. Just give us, it's only 5 minutes out of your time. It's not going to be that much. So just pull off to the side, pretend it's somebody from your family and thinking, you know what? They're going to go help somebody. I have 5 minutes out of my life.
People have a perception of firefighters. I think that it's like just this one thing, you know, that you guys do. What is the best part about this job that might surprise the public?
It's just the second family. Sometimes it's a kinder family because they have the same experiences that you do. You can't go home and talk about some of the experiences that you've had here. And sometimes our significant other doesn't understand the fact that we cried as a group at the dinner table and hugging and, you know, comforting each other. And that's it. You know, I mean, it's just we're brothers and sisters. We're dads. You know, it's like we call our officers dads sometimes. We have, you know, it's a different family, but we have them to fall back on. And it's something that you're not going to get in corporate life. And if somebody said you can't hug that person, you know, you can't do this or whatever, comfort them, or, you know, some good friends will sit out on the patio and just talk about different problems. And it gets pretty heavy sometimes, but it's just that understanding that we're that close.
Well, you know what, when the tone drops, we're all family and we all take care of each other, and you have that. And yes, sometimes there are the times where you're like, it's kind of nice to have 48 hours with my buddies and my, you know.
Is your wife going to listen to this?
Probably. Okay. I'm sure it'll be, that'll be one of those times where I'm like, I can't wait to go back to work now.
So it's kind of nice coming to work because, you know, any task that you have, I would say 99% of the time, if somebody sees you doing something, they're going to jump on it and help you. You're not doing anything alone.
It's a very unique job from somebody like that just getting into this. And it's really
fantastic.
It really is. I mean, I know, and that's part of what we'll do in this podcast is it's not all this amazing. You guys see some stuff. And we'll get into that, you know, and there's a lot of mental health part to this that the public doesn't consider either.
Mm-hmm. And that's why the support system and the normalcy of a regular job to this is completely different, because we used to
like it.
It's horrible stuff. And sometimes like I don't handle certain things very well, you know, and somebody might have a different experience with something else. And we know about it because we are so close. And so then, you know, they know to check up on me, or I know to check up on them. And it's for the most part, everybody's pretty open, and we know a lot about each other's lives to understand, the difficulties that a person's going to have on a certain call.
Yeah. So that was our first episode of The Fire Life. Thanks, you guys, for joining me on the first one. And we're going to do more, for sure. And there's so many aspects.
It was a lot of fun. You're good. You did a great job. Thank you. Thank you for coming out.
These guys are good. Yeah. We'll see you next week.
Medic 11. Engine 11.
You've been listening to The Fire Life.
Emergency traffic.
A podcast by Adams County Fire Rescue.
Adams County Off Day.
Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Roger, we've ordered two more rescues for you.
And check out our webpage, acfpd.org, for more on the services we offer, fire prevention information, and how to become a firefighter at Adams County Fire Rescue.
Medic 11.
Thanks for listening, and please stay safe.